You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. Yes, it must be a shock to you people to hear something that is exclusive to one race. Especially our race. You know, the race that you all hate vehemently? I mean, other than the Japanese. It's very interesting how you've let yourselves be modified people. You know, it's funny how our women are modified people. A lot of our men now are modified people. But all the other races have become modified as well. The power of the media has been shown to be true. I'll be doing a show on this very subject in the near future when we finish The Mystery of the Serpent. But I'll give you a clue about what the show's about. Have you ever wondered why you were attracted to the white countries of the world? And now that you're here, instead of enjoying the liberty and being appreciative of everything, you want to destroy it. Do you ever think of why you're trying to destroy it? Wouldn't you think that something you were attracted to would end up being something you would just treasure? That you would actually look at the indigenous people of the countries that you were attracted to and that they let you in and that you would look at them as people that you respect, people that you're thankful to? But it's not that way, is it? Why is that? Why do you think the blacks think that they're owed everything? Why do you think the Mexicans come over the border and the people from South America and they've come here because of the countries that they're in, they're being oppressed so badly, and they come here and they want to make it the same way it is down there, which means they really love their prison. And they must have been jealous of the white people, that they weren't in the same exact kind of bondage they are in. So you would think that they would join with the white people and actually try to free everybody and get the white nations to free those nations down there. I don't mean to free them and give them democracy, ladies and gentlemen. Let's not be stupid. Really, they need to free their own countries. But do you ever ask yourself, why do they come here and they want to destroy us and our society? Something that they've been attracted to. It would be like you going to the honey hive. You were attracted there because honey is so sweet. And instead of enjoying the honey, you wanted to destroy the hive. Doesn't make any sense, does it? Well, maybe you people that are doing these things, maybe you'll start to question yourselves. Why are we trying to do that? Anyway, we'll have a show on that. However, today's show is called The Mystery of the Serpent, Part 5. Now, I notice that when we do multiple part shows, you listen to the first one, and you listen to the second one. Eventually, you'll get around to the other parts. But this particular series, And really, I think all the series in the Saxon Creed series, show series, every one of these is just as important as the first one. Every one of these is going to give you information that is just as relevant as part one was. So, it's funny that people treat it that way. Well, it's starting to cool down, and we had a wonderful fall. But here we are in the midst of the cold. But it is kind of refreshing in its own way. So, I'd say let's get to this. Okay, we're going to start right here on page 27 if you're reading along with me. So we had talked about the fact that Jeremiah's prophecy was fulfilled in 566 BC when the Luciferian priesthood succeeded in consummating the great Babylonian Empire through King Nebuchadnezzar II. The 29th through 32nd chapters of Ezekiel prophesy the same episode. In all the annals of history, while the serpents murdered and robbed one another, God used them to destroy their own evilness so as to prevent them from becoming too strong. God placed Nebuchadnezzar II on the throne of Babylon in order to destroy the devil in Tyrus, Ezekiel 28:12-19, and imprison the insane pharaoh Uhabra of Egypt, so that King of Babylon could incorporate all Western Asiatic civilization into one empire and set the stage to raise up the branch of Satan, in whose house his scepter would be broken, and God would not permit him to reestablish a world empire. See what he just said right there? You see how I told you before, you say, you know, they say that they're setting up the New World Order, right? But I told you that Yahweh's not going to let them have that New World Order. And so you may have said, well, what are you talking about? It's already here. Oh, no, it's not here. We see it's breaking up at the moment. Once the EU breaks up, and it will, I believe, at least I'm praying that it will, that puts them back many, many, many years. All that work for nothing. And if the United Nations and NATO and all these foolish organizations, which should be dumped into the toilet, if they are finally dumped into the toilet, we're right back to the Congress in Vienna of 1815, where Rothschild was trying to institute the League of Nations, and the Tsar of Russia said, no way, Jose. So it is extremely important that the EU break up. It's extremely important that the United States take back its sovereignty, and that all of our nations take back their sovereignty. Because we as a people are naturally nationalists. We are not internationalists like the Jew. We have found out it doesn't work. We don't need to be interdependent and buy oil from Saudi Arabia when we've got the most oil in the whole world. We also know that oil is not running out, that it replenishes itself. The scam of I forget what it was called. Peak oil, I think it was called. And they were saying, oh, the world's running out of oil. Well, that's just another lie. And we will not always be using this oil, you see. There'll come a day when this oil won't be needed like it used to be. We'll have electric cars. We'll have new kinds of batteries. And the days of gasoline and powering your house through home heating oil, which is another thing that has been an abuse on the people, those days will end. Not only do people want to be independent of their government, but the government wants to be independent of the other countries of the world. You understand? And that's just natural. It's just natural for companies. You know, when we were all white countries, we competed against one another, and competition is a healthy thing. We competed through education. We competed with science. And now supposedly we all work together. And the lack of competition creates stagnation. Oh, there are some benefits to synergy. But the competition is there for a reason. It helps us to aspire to higher heights. Communism is the type of thing that causes men to become stagnant, causes countries to become stagnant. Because there is no competition. You see, the liar Jews, like Rockefeller or Rogenfelder or whatever his real Jew name is, he said competition is a sin. But see, he's an incapable Jew. Oh, he's got lots of money. They've stolen all kinds of money, no doubt about it. But he's incapable. He's more capable than most Jews. But that generation is dying. And the sons don't even have anywhere near the kind of chutzpah, or whatever you want to call it. You see, as they've decimated our people by putting us through wars and dumbing us down and putting drugs and all kinds of things in the foods and water supplies and everything to dumb us down, they've dumbed themselves down at the same rate. You know what's funny I find about it that I said to a Freemason one time? Now, the Freemasons go around walking around and they say everybody's stupid because, of course, they're intellectually superior, of course. You know, they've been flattered at the lodge so many times, telling them just how wonderfully brilliant they are and just how stupid the cattle are. But you know what cracks me up is they complain about it all the time. They complain how stupid the cattle are. And they've created this situation, and now they have to live with a bunch of stupid people. And they hate what they've created. I find it quite funny. It's a catch-22. You can't dumb down people until they're so stupid that they can't take any orders that you give them and then complain about it. So you can't have it both ways. I think that's very funny. So, we were reading here, and I always go off on these little tangents, but it all relates, and it makes sense to me. How about you, dear listener? So God placed Nebuchadnezzar II on the throne of Babylon in order to destroy the devil in Tyrus and imprison the insane pharaoh Uhabra of Egypt, so the king of Babylon could incorporate all Western Asiatic civilization into one empire and set the stage to raise up the branch of Satan, in whose house his scepter would be broken, and God would not permit him to reestablish a world empire. Okay, that's what got me going on at the world empire, right? That's what took me off on the tangent. Just remember that Nimrod was prevented the same thing, okay? That's why I say that they will not have their world order. Plain and simple. Because Yahweh's plans are going to supersede their plans. Period. When the Babylonian Empire was consummated, God had Satan where he wanted him, and in rapid succession, the serpents murdered one another in greediness, which they're doing right now. You see the bankers? You do see that, right? That the bankers are killing bankers off right now? And we do see that there's some competition between the serpents in the world today. I pray for the death of George Soros and his son. And I also pray for the death of the rest of these Jews that come from that generation. Because once they're gone, the next generation of them are even less capable than that generation was. And praise Yahweh for these things. So it says of each to reign as God. See, they're each trying to reign. They're competing. These snakes all want to reign as God. Yet the devil in Isaiah 14 failed to seize open domination, and his scepter was finally broken in 330 BC when a kinsman of Jewry's current god, Prince Abdul Baraba Baha, Darius III, was murdered by the satrap Bessus, which terminated the great Babylonian Empire, and the cockatrice of Isaiah 14:29 came out of the lowest depths of the bottomless pit as the devils of the Seleucidian dynasty. Okay, I want to mention a couple things because it was just, you know, it's just, I just crossed my mind. See, he talks about Kali here. This is the age of Kali and destruction. Now, have you ever seen I Pet Goat 2? You notice you see Kali dancing there? And you see the false Christ? You see the destruction of the churches? Oh, it's a very interesting little movie, and I've viewed it many times and in different commentaries on it, and I think some of them have some of it right, and some of them don't know what they're talking about. I wanted to mention something else to you. I did say this on a show I did with Eli a couple weeks ago. But I wanted to say this. This is my interpretation. When you see the Podesta with his hands up and you see 14 and the fish, you must notice that they try to go into this big, complicated thing trying to make it out to be 322. But what I will tell you, what I noticed about this that I don't think anybody else noticed, they didn't mention it at all. If you look at the way his hands are positioned, his thumbs are flat down straight across, and his hands are up, forming the bottom side of a box or a square. So the number 14 squared is about 195, I believe it is. 195, 196. That's the fish. It could represent that he has destroyed 196 Christian children. That could be what he's talking about. 14 squared and the fish being the little children. Now, otherwise, the fish, when you know about the story of Osiris, that Osiris was cut into 14 pieces and 13 pieces were recovered, everything but the privy member, which was swallowed by fish. So you can see that 196, you understand what I'm saying? These people are filthy. And may Yahweh destroy them as soon as possible. May they have no peace whatsoever. The same prayer I pray against Jews. I don't know if Podesta is a Jew, if he's an Italian Jew. I don't know what he is. I do know that he's filthy. And I do know what's coming his way. Whether he knows it or not, he seems to be smiling a lot. He's pretty happy of what he's done. But behold, something's coming his way. And may he be destroyed as soon as possible in the mighty name of Yahweh. So let's continue. The devil, however, left Babylon in 429 BC when he moved to Pergamos, Greece, from whence to plot the annihilation of the Israelite house of Judah in order to defeat God's plan for man's ultimate destiny. You see, the devil was at the door when our race was created. The devil, according to the book of Adam and Eve, as I have taught on my show, the devil was told to worship the image of God. I know I'm repeating to some of you, but others do not know about this. The devil, Halel, which transfers to Lucifer in Latin, Halel refused to worship the image, which was Adam. Now the angels were told by Yahweh, all of them were told to worship the image of God. In other words, his offspring. Halel refused, and he said, Michael the archangel told him to obey. He said, I will not. He said, I'm an older being than he is. He should worship me. And so the battle ensued. And a third of the angels in heaven joined this devil, which was then hurled down here. And that's why we see in the book of Job that he's roaming to and fro, seeking to whom he may destroy. Well, in the book, just to remind you, in the book of Adam and Eve, he comes back and deceives Eve again when she's doing her penance that Adam declared that they should do to Yahweh. And the devil tricked her again. And then they asked him at a certain point, they said, listen, why do you hate us so much? they hate us so much because he got kicked out of his home, his first abode up in heaven. So since he got kicked out of heaven, he made sure that Adam and Eve got kicked out of the garden, their first home. And him and his offspring, when he did this dastardly thing to immediately affect our race, immediately tried to destroy God's plan, immediately their children began to persecute us, as we see with Cain and Abel. Not just persecute, but actually kill. Now, this has been going on ever since those times, ever since we've been brought to this plane, this wherever we are, whatever you want to call this earth. Ever since we've been here, we've been persecuted by the devil and his offspring. He's tried to destroy our race and put a real kink in the thing right away, let's say. So, therefore, this continues, and we see right here what he's saying. So, listen again. The devil, however, left Babylon in 429 BC when he moved to Pergamos. Remember that in the book of Revelation, his throne was in Pergamos, right? I believe I'm correct on that. Pergamos, Greece, from whence the plot to plot the annihilation of the Israelite house of Judah in order to defeat God's plan for man's ultimate destiny. He failed, however, and he uses the word Jehovah. I don't use that word. Yeshua removed his house of Judah out of Palestine to the Danube Basin in 70 AD. The satanic race of Jews remained in Palestine, and the devil in the form of Jew Bar Koshab again attempted to retain a world empire by conquering the Roman Empire. Michael, however, used the Romans for his battle axe and weapons of war and broke the devil's scepter again in 135 AD. Notice what he said, that Satan wanted to destroy the Israelite house of Judah. He didn't say he wanted to destroy all the tribes at this point. He was going after the prime target. Is that happening today still? This is before Christ was on the earth, before Yeshua, Yahweh, died in the flesh. He was trying to destroy the house of Judah back then. We do know that he is destroying and trying to destroy. Remember, Germany must perish. We do see what's going on with Germany, that he's trying to destroy the house of Judah, right? We also see in South Africa, the Boers, he's trying to, through the Negroes and Jews, Jew communism, they're trying to destroy the tribe of Judah in South Africa. Are they not? How about England and Ireland? But then again, how about America? Oh yes, the devil and his mouthpiece, the devil and his literal offspring, are trying to destroy the tribe of Judah still to this day. So, Amos 9:3 says, Yahweh would permit the serpent to bite the house of Israel. The word serpent in that passage is Nakash, with the bars and dots under the second and third characters to prove he is the devil's counterfeit race of Jews. The prophecy is for this era and the house of Israel, who was promised all things for the latter days, the Christian dispensation in the Anglo-Saxon Celtic people, true to that prophecy, we as a people indeed have been struck by the skulking Jew snake hiding in the ambush of sham patriotism, and we have descended to the lowest depths of spirit, morals, and national apathy. The bottom of the sea in Amos 9:3, during the past 38 years, by the grace of God alone, will we rise to the surface in time to prevent being drowned by the Jew devil, who is now attempting to inveigle our government into signing into law international genocide treaty so as to make it impossible for us to grub Jewry out of our nation once people were to wake up to that fact. Jewry has now pushed us into World War III, in which he purposes to cause the heathen millions of Asia and Africa to extirpate the white race from the face of the earth. Ladies and gentlemen, what do you think? Is that not interesting? Is that not what's happening? Now, he didn't mention the Muslims there, but let's hold on. In Micah 7:17 is a prophecy repudiating Jewry's grandiose plot of destroying the house of Israel and our Christian faith in God. Micah says, the non-Israelite nations will lick dust. It symbolizes cringing fear or being annihilated. However, it is not natural for them to lick dust in the manner of the Jew serpent who licks it, in accordance with Genesis 3:14, and the meaning of the word flying and crooked in Isaiah 14:29 and Isaiah 27:1, which is proven when we denote the word serpent in Micah 7:17 is Nakash, written with the bars and dots in the original. The nations will lick dust when world Jewry pushes them in front of Russia in the final effort to annihilate Christendom. It is inevitable. All of Israel's prophets saw it in the dimension of the Spirit. And we lack only time to bring us in proximity with it. The final struggle is set forth in Ezekiel 38 and 39, which he names Russia as our adversary. Now, I don't know, I know that in the time of Dr. Wesley Swift and Comparé and this man, they believed that Russia was the key thing there. But you see, when these nations lick the dust, in my view, who has been licking the dust lately? Who have we been sending back to the Stone Age for the Jew? Why, the Muslim countries, right? It appears, and I can't promise you anything, but it appears that Russia has woken up from her sleep, and she knows who has done this to her. What was done to her in 1917? She is now recovering from that, or so I think. Yet, the calls for war against Russia have now been renewed. We haven't heard calls for war with Russia in a long time, have we? You see, Russia's not in full control of the Jew at this point, it seems. And they want to get control of it again. So therefore, again, our Shabbos Goy race trader military needs to bring democracy to them. You know what that means when we bring democracy to a people, don't you? You know, when we make them free. That means they need to be bombed back to the Stone Age. But it says here, let's go on. The final struggle is set forth in Ezekiel 38 and 39, which names Russia as our adversary. And the he in 38-17. You see, you got to realize, though, that Russia knows that Jewry controls America. And I do believe that Russia wants to save America. They know that the Jews want to do to us what was done to the Russians in 1917. And I do believe that the Russian people want to prevent that from happening to their brothers. I do believe it's the same type of thing as Hitler type of thing, where Russia would want to save us as their brothers, in the same way Hitler didn't attack England and places like that, you know, when he didn't want to destroy them because they were of his racial brethren. So that makes Russia an enemy of America at this point. What that really means when we say America, we're not talking about that Russia is my enemy. What it means is that Russia is the Jews' enemy. Because Soros is not allowed to do any business in Russia now. And Russia does not want to flood itself with immigration. And Russia does not want queers in their nation. And Russia is teaching their children about the 1917 revolution and what happened to the Tsar and their family. And Russia is giving farmland to their people for free. Russia is trying to heal itself as a nation. And Russia is encouraging the white people of Russia to procreate. Those are all things that the Jews does not want. Those are the things that the Jews institute. They take the farmland away. They don't give it out. They institute queers and everything else. They don't get rid of that. They bring in all these immigrants. They don't kick them out and keep them out of there. You understand? They allow Jew businessmen to do business in that country without any restriction whatsoever. They don't forbid them from doing business there. You see, there's a problem, and that's why Russia is now on the table for a war. They're our enemy. Oh, but you see, dear listener, what that means is it's the Jews' enemy, and in my view, Russia is our friend. So it says here again, let's move along. The final struggle set forth in is Jewry headed by the devil, Prince Abdul Baraba Baha. This was back then. We don't know who the devil is today. Whose image the Turko-Mongol Jew, Yosef Vissarionovich Djugashvili, Djugashvili, alias Joseph Stalin, sits on the serpent throne as the Magog, chief prince of Mekhesh or Moscow. Okay, Russia was our enemy then, no doubt about it. I'm talking about today. He is talking about then. In Matthew 7:10 and Luke 11:11 is Jewry's Ophidian religion of the Luciferian doctrine of spiritual illumination. Yes, that's the one Fritz Springmeier calls the Illuminati, but he doesn't want to admit that it's the Jews. I'll read it again for you. In Matthew 7:10 and Luke 11:11 is Jewry's Ophidian religion, that's a snake, of the Luciferian doctrine of spiritual illumination. It is denoted by the Greek word for the serpent, Ophis. In them Christ says, or if he asks a fish, will he give him a serpent? Since the time immemorial, the worship of God was symbolized by a fish. See the fish in the hand of, you understand? 14 squared, 196. The early Christians identified one to another by the image of a fish instead of the cross. They're regarded as Christ fishermen. That's what we are. As you are listening to me today, many of you have been brought down through the stream. I am a fisher of men, and so are the others at EFR. We are fishers of men. See, Yahweh didn't have to force me to listen to his voice. I listened to his voice. Yes, it took a little longer because there were a lot of voices in the world, like Paul says, and one must be careful which voices you're listening to. However, when Yahweh called, we dropped what we were doing, so to speak, and we began to do what he told us to do. In the same way the disciples did it. His sheep know his voice. If you hate me for what I'm telling you, for if I'm telling you the truth and you hate me for it, it is a good sign that you are not one of his sheep. As I have demonstrated many times in the scriptures, when you tell the Jews the truth, they throw stones at you. They want to imprison you. They want to kill you. They want to make sure that you can't have a job. They want to destroy you. If anything the Jews hate more than anything else is somebody that tells the truth. That's what Yeshua did. That's what the disciples did. That's what the prophets did. That's what the scribes, we are scribes of today, but not the ones that are in Jesus' time, that were with the Pharisees. We know his voice. We love his voice. You see, we have a love for the truth. We don't throw rocks at people when they tell us the truth. Even if we don't like something that we hear, we don't throw rocks at them. You see, not all truth. When you hear the truth about yourself, you may not like something you're going to hear. You may not like what somebody has to say. But that doesn't mean you have to throw rocks at them. What it means is you have to listen to what they say and weigh it. You know, as the Bible says in the book of Proverbs, that words to the ears are like mouth to the meat. You know, tasting of meat. As you taste the meat, you taste it and you judge what you're eating. Well, in the same thing is when you hear the truth, you weigh it out and you taste what you're hearing. You test what you're hearing. You may not like all truth that you hear. It may offend you. But you see, I'm not afraid to be offended. I don't need to throw any rocks at you if you told me something about myself that I didn't like. So, let's continue. So it says the early Christians identified one to another by the image of a fish instead of the cross. They're regarded as Christ's fishermen in Jeremiah 16:16, in Matthew 4:19, and Mark 1:17. The symbolism is carried on into Matthew 7:9 in the word bread. Man cannot live by bread alone, but by every word of God. It is Christ, the spiritual bread of life. The word is our bread. The word is what we taste it. You see? And as faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God, our ears test what we hear. You see? Let's continue. In Matthew 10:6, Christ Jesus tells his disciples to become as wise as serpents. That word serpent is Ophis in the original. As Christ Jesus uses the word, We know that serpent is on the same order as the one in Genesis 49:17, where Israel tells Dan he would become a serpent. That is what Christ is telling his disciples. Observe diligently and learn by experience. Be wise as serpents, but as gentle as doves, you see. Mark 16:18 says the disciples would take up serpents. From that passage in Acts 28:3-6, Christian clergymen have preached the serpent in Mark 16:18 is a snake, and the deadly thing is a dose of poison. In the original Greek, however, a snake is herpeton. He is found in James 3:7. The one in Mark 16:18, however, is an ophis, which proves it is of the serpent race of Jews and its Ophidian religion of worshiping Lucifer's divine wisdom. Notice that when you see the pharaohs, some of the pharaohs would wear a headdress that would have this serpent on the top, which represented divine wisdom, right? You've seen that. Okay, let's continue. Moreover, in the original Greek of Mark 16:18, the compound word take up is ario. It means to take away. It does not mean to take up as one would pick up anything, or as St. Paul took up the snake in Acts 28:3-6 and shook it off into the fire. Haha. Notice that the serpent, the flame, returned to the flame. Let me have a sip of coffee, please. So, the compound word deadly thing in Mark 16:18 is thanasimos, or belonging to the dead. That word dead is synonymous with the dead things in Job 26:5. It is the shades as the Jew serpent race. Remember I told you about Slim Shady? Remember that this book told us about the shades. Right here it just says, it is the shades as the Jew serpent race. Remember that Eminem says that his alter ego is Slim Shady. Now, I'm not into any of that music, but I heard that before, and for some reason, I remembered it. Slim Shady. If Christ was referring to the disciples drinking a lethal poison, the original for the word deadly would be thanatos. The drinking is not literal. It is the same as one would say, I drank in his philosophy. Christ Jesus, therefore, was telling his disciples they would take away the Luciferian doctrine from Israel by teaching his glorious plan, Yahweh's glorious plan, for spiritual salvation, which will eventually culminate in racial spiritual salvation after national redemption of the house of Israel from Satan's serpent race of Jews. And may that day come as soon as possible. We are teaching you now Yahweh's glorious plan. And we are teaching you the racial aspect of the scriptures. You see, I must explain to you, you must realize there's reasons for certain things that happen. Notice that as you were growing up, you were told not to pay attention to race. Notice that you were not to pay attention to color or religion or any of those things. And notice that the word race became a dirty word. But let me remind you that in the white race, We have always, from the times we were Israel, from the times we went to Europe, we always made sure who our daughters and sons were going to marry. We always made sure that their bloodline was correct, that they were one of the race, that they were a legitimate person of Israel. Race was not a dirty word until the more recent times. You hear this word race, and you're supposed to feel disgusted or ashamed. And in reality, we are proud of our race. I don't feel disgusted or ashamed about it. And I believe, you see, that's what the Jews did in their movies. They would have our daughters in the movies eloping with somebody who was a greaseball Jew Italian or something like that, you see? In other words, they fell in love. Isn't that what Romeo and Juliet is about somewhat? They would fall in love with somebody outside their race that their parents did not approve of, and what they would do is elope. Because they couldn't seem to find somebody in their own race they could fall in love with, you see. Think about what I'm telling you. Race has always been important. But number two, let's think about something else. Why does the Catholic Church ascribe to universalism? And why do all the other churches? Why did the Catholic Church go out of its way to take the Apocrypha out of the books of the Bible? Oh, you don't know why? Well, I'll tell you why. Not only did those apocryphal books fill in the gaps between the Old and New Testament, so to speak, but they happened to point directly to racial issues. Oh, you didn't know that? Oh, you didn't read those? Is that what you're telling me? Oh, because they're from the Old Testament, right? In other words, you don't want to have too much to study. The New Testament is enough. You wouldn't want to take on the responsibility. In other words, you want to just open the door a crack and peek through and find out what we're supposed to know. You don't really want to open the door. When it says, if any man knock, I will open unto him. The Word, he's the Word, right? So if you knock at the door, you don't want him to open the door, do you, Mr. Judeo-Christian? You just want him to open it just enough to see a little bit of what might be inside. But he said he'd open the door unto you if you knocked. You don't want the full door open? You don't want to see the Old Testament? You don't want to know anything about it, do you? Now, who put that in your mind that that should be that way? Who told you? Who turned you against the Word of God? Do you have an answer for that? Who turned you against the Old Testament? If you have a love for the truth, do you have a love for the whole truth, or do you just have a love for a portion of the truth? Do you think you should read the Apocrypha and find out what these books say? I mean, after all, they're mentioned in your New Testament. The book of Jasher and the book of Enoch is mentioned. You're not interested? And when Yahweh speaks, or Yeshua, he tells you it is written. When the Apostle Paul speaks, he says it is written. Are you sure you don't want to check and see if the Apostle Paul's telling you the truth and find out where it is written? No, you know, you want the door open just a crack, right? You're not interested in learning the whole truth, right? You don't have a love for the whole truth. You just want to know enough to maybe get you into the kingdom, right? Well, Sorry to tell you, it doesn't work that way. If you don't love the truth, you love death. Those who hate God love death. Did you notice how the Satanists who hate Yahweh love death? Did you notice how the Jews who hate Yahweh love death? They love that because they're living dead things. They don't think like you and I. Just because they look like you and I somewhat doesn't mean they think like you and I. As a matter of fact, just because our women look like they're of us doesn't mean they think the same way as a man does. As a matter of fact, they think very differently than a man does. And it's a very hurtful thing. But no, not all of us are the same. And no, not all of us have the same blood. And no, not all of us think the same. And no. You've been fooled. You see, like I said to you, I said to that Irish woman that I really liked a lot, I said, you don't believe the news would lie to you? Why don't you believe that? She said, because I would never do that. She thinks because she would never do these things, that all the rest of these people would never do these things. Well, I'm sorry to tell you, here's another uncomfortable truth. Now pick up a stone and get ready. No, they're not. They don't think like you. Especially the Jew does not think like the Aryans do. Hitler would tell you that if you read Hitler. But I'm sure you don't want to know about that either, because it's just easier to let the Jew dictate to you what all truth is. You have no questions for the Jew, do you? You know how these people come out and they'll question all of us when we teach on these subjects. And sometimes I want to say to them, well, you're a Judeo-Christian and a Jew lover and a Jew worshiper. Why don't you go see if the rabbi will answer your question? Why don't you say, let's see you go ask that same question to the rabbi and see what answer you're going to get. But you don't question the rabbi, do you? So, let's move along. So, this is a great paragraph. I'm going to read it again. Christ Jesus, therefore, was telling his disciples they would take away the Luciferian doctrine from Israel by teaching his glorious plan for spiritual salvation, which will eventually culminate in racial spiritual salvation after national redemption. You see, notice that national redemption comes first. That's more important than individual. Notice that it's not after international redemption. Right? You understand now? We are nationalists. We are naturally nationalist. We are naturally patriotic to our nation, to our flag, and would be to our government if they weren't so oppressive and so against the nation. So after national redemption of the house of Israel from Satan's serpent race of Jews, anyone hearing the message of Christ yet turns from him to the serpent's Luciferian doctrine will be destroyed by the serpent in accordance with 2 Corinthians 10:9. The serpent there is Ophis, one taking that deadly thing in one's bosom renounces spiritual life. You see what I'm trying to tell you, Judeo-Christian? Let me go back to this page again and start that again. Listen to the warning. Anyone hearing the message of Christ, yet turns from him, from Christ, to the serpent's Luciferian doctrine, will be destroyed by the serpent in accordance with 2 Corinthians 10:9. The serpent, therefore, there is Ophis. One taking that deadly thing into one's bosom renounces spiritual life because the portions of the Luciferian doctrine, Ophis, which the serpent race, the Ophites, permits us to see, seems so logical, it appears to be the true way of spiritual salvation. However, it leads one into the swamp of spiritual death. And if one goes all out for it, and one drinks the serpent's deadly misrepresented liberalism, fraternity, and brotherhood, and equality, then marries a Jew, and one's line is killed in the satanic blood system of Jewry, and in turn becomes a vampire. Take heed to those words, ladies and gentlemen. You do see what just happened to Donald Trump's child there, right? The woman, she became a Jewess. It's not really funny. I shouldn't laugh. It's really a tragedy. Why do Jews want to be part of Donald Trump's family? Well, I think you can figure it out pretty quickly. I don't trust anybody, but I'm watching this man. That's what I'm doing. I mean, I don't trust any politicians. And I'm just watching. Some of what I see I like so far, some I don't. So, the serpent in 2 Corinthians, this time it's Corinthians, 11:3, is an Ophis. He is the serpent race of Jews, the same who beguiled Mother Eve. St. Paul is worried about the Christians being influenced by the new Gnostic version of the Luciferian doctrine revised by Simon Magus, the Simon of Acts 8:9-13, to sabotage the faith in God. You've seen this, right? In Revelation 9:19 is the record of something observed by St. John when Christ Jesus took him into the dimension of the Spirit in 35 AD. He says, "For their power is in their mouth and in their tails, for their tails were like unto serpents." That serpent is an Ophis. Yet it is not the serpent race or its religion. It symbolizes the type of cannon used by the Turks in 1453 AD when they conquered the Eastern Holy Roman Empire. The war, however, was financed and fomented by Jewry's Greater Sanhedrin, which had been in Constantinople since 79 AD. That cabal remained there until 1552. Archaeologists have recovered guns used in the campaign. Their muzzles were cast in the image of a lion's head, Revelation 9:17, and their tails were fuses ignited by the torches. John describes them as being similar to the serpent, who in 1453 had his tail anchored around Lhasa, Tibet, from whence came the spark that caused him to belch forth the fire and brimstone of geopolitics, which caused the Turco-Mongol invasion of Christendom. in accordance with the genealogical record of Jewry's current devil god, Prince Abdul Barabbaha, the serpent in Constantinople in 1453 was the Turco-Mongol Jew Amurath II. I bet you won't see any of this in your history books, ladies and gentlemen. From Genesis 3 to Revelation 9, we have observed the people we know as Jews are the serpent race of the devil, whose evilness is the devil and his demons in the dimension of the spirit. To prove it without leaving any doubts in our minds, St. John in Revelation 12:9 and 20 verse 2 lays Jewry wide open and exposes him all at once as the red dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan. Irrespective of the fact, let us not end this expose at this occasion, because one may yet ask, how can the devil be the king of the Jews, and Jewry be satanic? For is not the devil purely a spirit being cast down into the lower regions of the earth? Does not the Bible declare the Jews are God's chosen people? No, it doesn't. The answer to both is emphatically no. And the Bible message proves it. Any historian knows they are not God's chosen people. They are not of Israelite extraction. And the Bible sets forth in plain English that Jewry is the literal household of the devil. And in 1920, Dr. Oscar Levy, a Jew in England, stated in the preface of the book, The World Significance of the Russian Revolution, he stated this, ladies and gentlemen, listen, ready? Are not the Jews the inventor of the chosen people myth? That was stated in that book. See if you can get yourself a copy of The World Significance of the Russian Revolution, where this man, this Jew, not this beast of the field, this serpent, states, are not the Jews the inventor of the chosen people myth? The theory of hell being in the nether regions of the earth or any other place where the devil resides to burn human souls after death of the body is Jewish. And they obtained it from their ancestral devil god, Nergal-Shar-Usur, a son of King Nebuchadnezzar II of Babylon, which was slipped over the head of Christendom in order to deceive us with the lie so we would not see the truth of that Jewry is satanic. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're on the edge of your seats like I am. Enoch of the Adamic line of Seth says in his messianic prophecy, the devil came out of the dimension of the spirit around 41,000 years ago. He did it on his own accord. Pay attention to this. This is how he got from the spiritual plane to the material plane. Yes, he was cast down, and he would be still a spirit, you understand? But he now can get himself into the material plane. How do I know that's true already? Because we saw that when Isaac and Abraham was going to sacrifice Isaac, the devil could appear. The devil could even make himself a river. But let's see what he says here. The devil did this on his own accord, and God did not create him. Yet Colossians 1, in other words, he did not create him in this spiritual plane is what he's trying to say here. He did it on his own, and God did not create him. Yet Colossians 1:16 says God created everything. And John 1:3 says all things were made by him, and without him not anything was made that was made. That is true. God, however, did not create the devil. Therefore, he and his counterfeit race of Jews are unrealities as a lie in an error in the tangible forms of humans, John 8:44. God, however, created Lucifer, yet he died, and when he failed to conform in accordance with the divine law, and the spiritual deadness became Satan, or God's adversary. He was then thrust out from the throne of God, right? He was hurled. those were his own words. He was then thrust out or hurled from the throne of God in the high plains of the spirit or heaven to the lowest depths of the dimensions of spirit. He was totally cut off from God, and he thought of ways of getting revenge. Yet he could not touch God in any manner. Therefore, he came out of the pit of spiritual upside-downness to the material plane without God's approval in order to get revenge against God by spiritually and physically killing man. Because man's life force is of God, and by killing man, the pain would also hurt God. When he was in the pit, he was intangible spiritual evilness. Yet when he transposed himself into the material plane, he was tangible flesh, yet counterfeit, because he was in no manner part of God, and the transposition was in direct violation of divine law. Now remember, I told you that this devil, through the space program, through NASA, through man becoming God, you know, the illuminated NASA, he's trying to escape the planet. But I believe that Yahweh has put it in place that this devil will not leave this planet. Period. Let's continue. Genesis 14:18 gives a relative picture of the situation in which God's Christ Son of righteousness as Melchizedek stepped out of the dimension of the Spirit to renew his covenant with Father Abraham in the sacrament ritual. He came into the material plane, see, to save us. You see, he had to come into the material plane to save us. Why would he have had to step out of the comforts of his throne in heaven? He wouldn't have had to do that if he could have done it from there. This promise of Christ was given to Adam and Eve. And when she had had the first son, she thought that this was Christ. Remember Genesis 4:1? She thought that was Christ. The promise. But it turned out to be Cain. Because sin gives birth to sin. I want you to realize that. I say this all the time. Why does Yahweh want us to institute the death penalty? Because if you allow sin to live, it will give birth to more sin, which then flowers out to more people who will give birth to more sin, and so on and so on. If one cuts it off at the root, then one has saved the world a multitude of sin, a multitude of hurt. You see, you may be saying, well, we don't want to kill this beast of the field who raped this woman or who raped this little child. Our feelings, we don't feel right doing that. Well, what would you rather do? Would you rather kill that beast of the field off now, or would you rather let him multiply the sin and hurt a whole bunch more people? I seriously don't know what's wrong with your people's minds. Somebody made you so sensitive with your feelings that you can't even see in front of your own eyes. You can't even see what common sense is. Which is easier, killing one demon or one beast of the field or one pedophile, or waiting until it multiplies into a whole group of pedophiles? Which is easier? Look what we've got now with Pizzagate. Look what we've got now worldwide. Would it have been easier to kill them off one at a time, or let the thing grow perpetually and then say, well, now we've got a big problem. How are we going to address this problem? Don't you see the wisdom of Yahweh? There's something wrong with you people's minds. It, of course, is the enemy, the devil, the Jew, his offspring, who have reversed these death penalty laws. To put somebody into prison is to actually put them in a perpetual place where we have to keep feeding them. We have to keep clothing them. We have to keep them alive, and all it does is drain what we could have ourselves. Why would we want to do something like that? Why would we want to have the Federal Reserve print up the money for the government when the government can print up the money itself? Why would we want to do that? Why? Can you answer that question? So, he came into the material plane in accordance with divine law, because the law is in his being. He was real and as tangible as Abraham. The wine and bread he brought out of the dimension of the spirit was also real and tangible. He and Abraham ate bread and drank wine. In Genesis 19:1 through 22 is the record of two of the archangels who stepped out of the dimension of spirit into the material plane in the interest of Lot and his family. They are tangible food. They ate tangible food cooked by Lot's wife. They were tangible. Of course, the queers and scumbags of that age wanted to rape them. You know what I mean? They wanted to rape those angels. What does that say to you? Now, you see what's going on in Lot's time, and these queers and reprobate-minded people wanted to rape two angels. Now, these are the people that you defend today, dear Christian. These are the people that you want to have, that you say are God's children also. But then again, you say the beast of the field are God's children. And then you say that anybody is God's child, no matter how, even the devil is God's child. Don't you say that? Yes, you do. So these angels were tangible. In Genesis 32, 24 through 30 is the record where another archangel stepped out of the spiritual plane and wrestled with Father Jacob all night. He was as tangible as Jacob. In Luke 1, 1 through 38 is the record where Gabriel stepped out of the dimension of spirit to inform Zacharias that his wife would conceive and bear John the Baptist. He then made himself manifest to the Virgin Mary and informed her that she had been selected to be the mother of God. Her son was Jesus Christ, the same as Melchizedek in Genesis 14:18. He as Melchizedek, you see, that's what I told you, is that not only is Yahweh the best judge, but he's also the best priest. He is Melchizedek. He's the top, you know, he's the priest of priests. He's the king of kings. You understand? He's the judge of judges. So he, as Melchizedek, could have stepped out of the dimension of the spirit in full stature, as he did in Genesis 14:18. In that condition, however, he would have not been subject to death, which he had to endure in order to destroy the devil. It was essential, therefore, for his spiritual energy to be born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. John 1:13. So the devil could murder him and then be resurrected in order to cancel spiritual and physical death in the house of Israel. Then ultimately, for all humanity, after Israel teaches men the truth about God and the things spiritual and things material, without the devil and his satanic race of Jews being around to sabotage and destroy the work. Well, he's getting a little universal there. In Acts 1:11 are two of the archangels talking to the disciples of Christ after the latter passed back into the spiritual plane after his resurrection from death. He passed back into the spiritual plane in the same body his disciples loved, walked and talked with, ate and drank with, and that which was pierced on the cross. Yet, at the moment of the ascension, his powers of the cosmos changed the vibratory impulses of the spiritual energy of which his body was made. See, this man was a Catholic, you can tell because he says Saint John, but he was also a Freemason. So you have to understand that his mind is a little tainted, yet he knows that we are the true Israel. Pardon me, I'd like to have a sip of coffee. So, let's see what he says here. I think this is where we're starting to run out of time here. So, he passed back into the spiritual plane in the same body the disciples loved. Yes, okay. The record, therefore, proves... Let me just bring this down just a little bit. The record, therefore, proves when it became necessary for God's Christ Son of Righteousness and his archangels to come into the material plane in accordance with divine law, all that was necessary was merely to change the wavelength of the spiritual energy of which they are made, and lowering of the vibratory impulses made them visible to human eyes without discomfort. And they were as tangible as any human. They ate, they breathed, and they had all the prerogatives of man. And because they were in direct communication with the Eternal Father, they could step into the material plane and back into the spiritual plane with impunity. If it had been in accordance with God's plan for them to remain in the material plane, and they married human women, they could have fathered children as tangible and as real as we. On the other hand, however, the devil was totally displaced. I think we'll finish it right here. He was displaced, excuse me, from God. So the devil was totally displaced from God, and when he transposed himself into the dimension of the material, contrary to divine law, it was impossible for him to go back into the dimension of spirit because God's spiritual energy was not the composition of the counterfeit substance going in to make the microcosmical order of his body or the state of being material. From that twice-dead beast, mongrelizing with human women, spraying the people we know as Jews, whose God for all ages has been the current devil, which is proven by Genesis 4, John 8:44, and Matthew 23:35, proves they are responsible for all the bloodshed in our Adamic Israelite household. So I think we're going to end it right there for now, and we should finish this message next week. It's only a couple pages left. We're on page 33. Ladies and gentlemen, we are living in strange times, and we are living in a conundrum. We are living with a vampire race that seeks to destroy us. It's a wonder we have made it as far as we have, because we naturally have this thing where we're merciful. And that is not a weakness. Mercy is not a weakness. But it can be used against one. They have no mercy. And they give no mercy. But they expect mercy if they're ever down on their luck. And we seem to give it every time. As for instance, when they're kicked out of one of our brother's countries and they come to the gates of our country or the walls or the whatever, they come with the sob stories and those crocodile tears, and we fall for it almost every time, if not every time. Sooner or later, we're going to have to smarten up, and we're going to have to realize who we are dealing with. I must tell you that when I look around the world today, it's getting ever harder to identify who's who. You know, God made it so that you would always know who's who. He made Italians Italian. He made, you know, Muslims Muslims, etc., whatever you want to call them. But all this race mixing has clouded up the scene. You see? It has muddied up the waters, and it's hard to tell. It's getting harder to tell who's who. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and until next time, study to show thyself approved.